my business is changing. I need to use more data and insights in order to make better decisions.
Welcome to We're Only Human, a podcast focused on blending research and practical advice to help today's HR, talent, and learning leaders improve business outcomes. Let's welcome your host, Ben Eubanks.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode of We Are Only Human. I'm Ben Eubanks, your host, and I'm thrilled to be here with you today. A few quick housekeeping things before we get to the show. First, if you're not subscribed to We Are Only Human, it's really easy. We're on Spotify, Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, need I go on? You won't want to miss conversations like the one you're about to hear on today's show. Additionally, the HR Happy Hour Network is now available on Amazon Alexa, and I contribute to the show on occasion. It's a short episode there, under 5 minutes, that allows you to get a quick bite and get on with your day, saving the full episodes for commutes or, like me, when you're cleaning dishes, doing a workout, that kind of stuff. Just add the HR Happy Hour skill to your Alexa, and you can get those episodes on your daily flash briefing. I have a few upcoming episodes, actually, on hiring discrimination, the 3 value points of artificial intelligence, and more. And finally, if you find We're Only Human valuable at all, I personally appreciate it if you would help by sharing the show with a friend. I tell everyone it's a great way to listen in on the conversations that an analyst, author, and researcher has without having to spend hours on the phone like I often do. Share the love, karma, and all that good stuff. Now, on to today's topic. Recently, I read an article about how algorithms are being used to make determinations about everything from prison recidivism rates to how state agencies should make family custody decisions. Algorithms are a part of our daily lives, for better or for worse. But what happens if there's a bias in the algorithm that affects certain populations disproportionately? That's a key focal point for today's conversation with two incredibly sharp women. I had the pleasure of interviewing Lisa DeLuca and Amber Graywall of IBM. Lisa is a distinguished engineer and a brilliant thinker. You'll hear that pretty quickly when you hear her speak. Amber is in charge of hiring and onboarding more than 50,000 people a year, which requires her to be sharp not only with talent strategy, but also understanding the business needs. Two really great insights, and I can't wait for you to hear from them. We're going to dive right into the conversation, and I hope you're ready to take some notes because the episode is full of great ideas, insights, and strategies that you can think through and how to improve your own HR function. Be sure to check out the show notes for additional links to some of the things IBM is up to, including testing their candidate experience for yourself to see what it's like. Now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to We're Only Human. I'm Ben Eubanks, your host, and I'm honored to have you here today. You know, last week, I actually had the pleasure of speaking at the SHRM Diversity Conference about the impact of AI and algorithms on bias and decision-making, and I received a ton of questions from the audience because this is something that everyone wants to know about. It's a very hot topic, lots of news coming out lately again around this in a variety of disciplines, not just in HR. And today I actually have some really amazing, incredible, I can't say enough nice words about them, subject matter experts from IBM here to help shed some additional light on the subject. I'm joined today by two IBMers with very extensive credentials, Lisa Seacat DeLuca and Amber Graywall. Lisa, Amber, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks for having us. I'm Lisa DeLuca, and I am a director of offerings within our Watson Internet of Things division. So thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. We also have Amber
here. Thanks, Lisa. Hi, Ben. Amber Graywall. I'm the global head of talent acquisition at IBM, responsible for about 50,000 hires every year. Thanks for having us here.
Absolutely. Again, I mentioned it, and we'll have a chance for the audience to kind of see some of your insights and the things that you bring to the table. But I was so excited to talk to both of you ladies because you bring a different perspective to this thing that all of us want to know about, right? Again, we'll get to bias and everything else in a little bit. Before we get to that, I want to know, you both told me, you know, what you do. Tell me something that you're excited about in the work that you can do at IBM.
I'll jump in. So I'm really excited about AI in general and the role of intersecting AI with some existing technologies. So technologies that might be new or have been around for thousands of years. One of the offerings that we're bringing to market is called IoT Building Insights, where we're taking sensor readings within the buildings and then using AI to predict anomalies and energy. So it's pretty cool.
Oh, wow. That is awesome. Amber, try to top that.
Yeah, no, that we get to leverage and play with all the great, exciting stuff that Lisa and others are making. So it makes it really fun. But you know, if you think about it, you know, we're in this time where things are just changing so much and they're changing so fast. And you know, being in talent acquisition, that is something that
needs to be reinvented in order to be able to support the businesses of today, the market of today, and what the candidates are looking for. So these new advances in technology, you know, such as AI, and how we want to reinvent the experience is what gets me excited every day. You know, how do we create these consumer-grade experiences for our candidates? How do we use AI to build more predictability? How do we get smarter in what we're doing and really look at data and analytics to provide better outcomes for our businesses? So just the technology itself, but the era we're in, and how the function itself is reinventing from decades ago is really exciting.
Oh, absolutely. Again, you and I could riff on that one all day. I love talking about how it's evolving and the sorts of things that we can do today that we've always wanted to do, and now the technology is finally catching up to allow us to create those really personalized experiences for like every person that comes through. That's just exciting to think about. If you've been following IBM for any period of time, you know that it's almost synonymous with Watson, right? Everybody thinks about Watson almost immediately after you hear IBM. And I love hearing stories about the really cool things that Watson does in healthcare and everything else. But to be honest, again, I'm like you, Amber, I am a recruiter and HR leader at heart. And so I love the Watson Talent products. I point to them all the time as a great example, a great resource for things like the insights you get on your talent pipelines and those types of insights. I love that because, again, it helps me to be a better recruiter, perform better, bring better deliverables to the company. And that level of insight really makes recruiting easier. I'd be curious to hear from you really quick. What sort of interesting ways does your team actually use Watson to help you get your work accomplished?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're big fans of Watson as well, and Watson is making our lives much easier. So just some ways for you to think about how we're using it, and we're using it kind of end-to-end in our life cycle, you know, HR as a whole, but then also very specifically within talent acquisition. So just in terms of even the outreach, how our recruiters are reaching out to candidates, they will use Watson Tone Analyzer to make sure, are they personalizing their message? Are their messages inclusive? What kind of language and content is that mail that they send to the candidates itself? So many times, you know, people send generic information. Now with Watson, we can personalize that message. And even think about how now we're recruiting and marketing, we're able to take Watson insights and to really target our marketing and outreach to various candidates and events that we go to. So that kind of is the engagement attraction piece. But then also for how we are sourcing and matching candidates, you know, we get about 7,000 applications daily. So that volume is massive. Now, Watson is helping our recruiters match candidates against jobs. So that in itself is, you know, something that would take hours. Watson is able to do it in seconds. So that, you know, we've been able to implement across all the 170 countries that we recruit. So that is a really important piece. Another thing is that really personalizing the experience for candidates, because we know how those consumer-grade experiences, and that's what our candidates expect from us. So now when our candidates are coming to our career site, they're able to work with Watson to find jobs that are personalized for them. So they could ask Watson questions about particular jobs, and Watson will make a recommendation on what jobs would be the most interesting to them. Not only that, Watson will help answer questions about the company, its culture, about the team, about location. So really creating more of what we call conversational commerce in this day and age, where you can use Watson to have more of a dialogue and understand, you know, what's going to be a best fit for me. And then also, you know, we have Watson recommending career paths and learning, you know, Watson as a career coach to help them think about as they start their journey within IBM, how can I get to the next level? What are my career paths? What kind of learning do I need that is associated with this? And as I mentioned earlier, you know, we hire many, many people. We want to also make sure that their onboarding has such a great experience. So we have embedded Watson as part of the onboarding experience, where 70% of the questions new hires have are answered by our onboarding specialist. So again, that in itself is enhancing the experience, giving us more efficiency, more productivity for recruiters to really you know, focus on building those relationships with hiring managers and the candidates themselves. So that's just some things that we're doing, but Watson definitely is a hero for us.
Absolutely. Goodness. Again, I said it a minute ago. It's like you wanted to create this kind of personalized experience for people for a long time, right? Any good recruiter tries to do that, but it's hard to scale those things up. And seeing how it can do that for this, these amazing populations, just you said 7,000 people, you know, applications a day, that just kind of blows my mind a little bit to think about that volume. But again, that there's no way that a human could do that, or even a team of humans could do that without great expense. But for Watson to do that, quickly, you know, doesn't get tired, doesn't get worn out, doesn't make a mistake because, you know, any of those things, it's really incredible. It can create some amazing experiences, not just efficiencies, not only the other good things we're looking at from a business perspective, but from every single one of those candidates. They feel like I was heard, I was listened to, someone cares about me. And it's a fundamentally different experience than just going and applying on a career site, right?
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
We talked about bias a little bit, and we've heard some really cool things about what Watson's doing inside of IBM. I'd love to talk some more about bias. You know, again, when I go out and talk to audiences about this, about AI, I always get the question of algorithmic bias, how are algorithms biased, and all those other pieces of that puzzle. And I give them the answer because I'm an HR leader, and I give them that answer from a business perspective, but I'd love to hear the technical perspective a little bit. So Lisa, can you explain about kind of how the team focuses on bias with Watson to make sure that you guys are making the right decisions and it's recommending the right things?
Yeah. So really with bias, what you need to do is make sure that the data that's training the system is not biased itself, right? So if you can train with a wide variety of information within the system, then you're not going to have some of that bias. And a lot of that starts with just having a diverse set of people looking into what data is going into the system. You probably heard that IBM released the largest most diverse facial recognition data earlier this year. And that's really important because it was found that facial recognition software was biased towards humans that had that darker skin color. So it was really important that IBM did this to have that diverse set of features that are then used to help train the system. One of my favorite examples of bias within a solution was the Boston Pothole mobile application. I don't know if you heard about that one, but what they did was they created this mobile application that you just put on your phone in your car, and the sensors within the mobile device would then vibrate when there was a pothole. And so they were able to then have the city maintenance go and fix the potholes whenever one was detected. And they found out that, unfortunately, that was only in those areas where people could afford to have a mobile app to install the application. So even though it had nothing to do with the people that were involved, the bias was more about, you know, people meaning diversity, but it was more about that difference in what people could afford. So I thought that was an interesting use case. And the way they solved it was putting the mobile application within the trash vehicles. So pretty cool way of going about the problem.
Absolutely. Well, so the training, the data sets that you're going to train these things, right? And you also mentioned having a diverse set of people kind of look at this, right? It's not just about having this uniform group of individuals looking at the data because they don't bring that difference of opinion, different of perspective, those things that a diverse group can bring. Can you just point out a little bit how the team at IBM does that, right? How do you guys make sure that you have a group that's looking at this that will think of those things that a homogeneous group maybe would not think about?
Yeah. So this goes over probably to Amber on how we hire these great people that come in and help us develop the software. I know my team is very diverse, right? So we've got people from all over the world that's working on it, men and women. My lead architect and our distinguished engineer who are overseeing the project are both women. So it's pretty cool to see all the different people that can come together to make the software function.
Absolutely. Amber, you want to chime in anything there?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Lisa mentioned it right, which is you want to ensure that you have an inclusive group, right? Who's teaching the AI? What data is it learning from? And do you have a full representation of, you know, gender, race, and functions and groups, right? Both the technical skills, but then also, you know, we have IO psychologists that are part of it. So you have scientists, you have various people that come together from various roles and gender to look at things in a different perspective. And, you know, which is, we're great. We have, you know, the amount of people we hire, we have so many skill sets and we can bring so many people from a geologist to a doctor, to a scientist, to an architect, you know, which makes it really exciting. But that's the most important part is that you have a very diverse group coming together and looking at this data and teaching the AI because it's learning from experts.
Absolutely.
And I just
Absolutely.
To add, it's also really important about the transparency of how you came to the conclusion that you came to, right? So it's not just about the data being pulled into the system, but you got to continually learn over time and look at the data that comes out of the system and double check yourself to see if it's coming up with the answers that you thought it would.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's one of the things that I recommend when I'm talking to HR leaders about this stuff, because I've seen some their I want to say they're humorous, but they're almost frightening stories of how decisions are made about what sort of things are predicted by an algorithm. And I always encourage them, you need to ask, right? If you're not sure where this came from, or you're even, you know, you're going to have to account for it, right? You'll have to answer for it as the HR leader, as the talent leader. If this thing makes the wrong decisions, you're still on the hook because it's just automating a decision that you probably would have made anyway. And so we've got to be really clear and ask a lot of questions when we're talking to a provider about how is this decision made? What sort of signals were factored into this to lead to this prediction? And especially if you're going to put your weight on that, put your job on that line, right, you need to make sure those things are very clear. And if a vendor's not willing to tell you those things, they're not willing to be as open as you guys are in this conversation about that kind of stuff, then that might be a red flag. So really look at those things. Don't be afraid to ask, because the black box is not your friend in when it comes to algorithms and predictions and all the other things.
Yeah, and Ben, I think you make a really good point here, you know, as talent acquisition professionals who are all trying to reinvent, and I can, you know, I think about my peers in the industry, you know, many of them are thinking about, you know, now bringing AI into their function, and a lot of them have questions like, where do we get started, and, you know, which vendor do we select, how do we select them, because there's so many there, you know, from large scale to startups, and I think it's very important to ask what you mentioned, which is the question. And you have to start by asking, what data did your AI learn from? How did you come up with these algorithms? Because that data piece is very, very important. And, you know, you have to look at diverse sets of data, but then also, are you validating it, as Lisa mentioned, right? What was the purpose of the data? Was there transparency? Was there validation? And how is the AI learning? So I think all of those factors are so important, because when you think about it, just the searchable data out there is only 20%. 80% of the data is with the enterprise. So a lot of this data is with you, but it's unstructured. So you have to structure the data and look at it and to make sure that was there no bias originally in this data, and make sure that you are teaching it in this form. So all of these questions are very important for leaders to look at and ask as they make some of these selections.
Absolutely. I was going to say, you don't have to be a Lisa to be able to answer those questions either, or to ask those questions, right? You don't have to be this genius engineer. You can ask these questions from a business perspective, right? We've got to ask these questions just in terms of, you know, how do we get to these outcomes and some things like that, because, again, you're going to have to account for those at some point. So we've talked about potholes and facial recognition, right? We've talked about some examples of how bias can affect an algorithm. You know, I've seen lots of stories of things outside of those scopes as well, just talking about the ways that AI works and some of the biases that can affect the outcomes there. How does this translate to HR, right? The world that we live in, the decisions that we make as HR leaders, and we keep hearing about AI as a tool to improve, but then recent announcements from some different companies have talked about how AI doesn't always eliminate bias. And I'd love for you to take a minute and talk about this, because it kind of brings all these points we've talked about today together, I think, to help tell that story the right way.
Yeah, I think, again, it starts with asking yourself, what is the purpose? You know, why do I want to leverage AI or technology in my organization, right? So I think it first starts with that question is, I want to drive outcomes for my organization. My business is changing. I need to use more data and insights in order to make better decisions. I have to provide consumer-grade experiences. I have to work in speed. So you want to drive particular outcomes that are going to help you deliver. So I think it starts with that. It starts with, what am I trying to solve for, and am I thinking in an outcome mindset? And then from an HR perspective, you have to see, what is going to help me get better experiences to help automate, to help provide these better experiences. There's so much information out there, and if I still have, I'm not able to provide transparency and information to my candidates or hiring managers, then that tells you your systems and processes are legacy, right? So it starts with that mindset to know I have to change. Why do I need to change, and where do I need to change? So I think it's beyond technology. You have to relook at your operating model. You have to make sure you have the right skills within your organization, and then you want to use technology to enable it. So for us, you know, it wasn't just technology is going to solve everything. It's been a journey. It's been a journey in the way we work, new ways of working and using agile design thinking, as well as really focusing on our teams and then adding technology to enable us to move even faster. So as you get to the technology point, you know, you have to always remember it is to help augment the individual. And you need the domain expert, but you help and use technology to augment. Because we always say that it's man and machine together get the better answers versus one or the other. So when making these decisions, you have to, I would say, look at all of these aspects.
Absolutely. I was going to say that reminds me, there's one of the common things I've always said about technology in the HR space is if you have the wrong process in place and you put technology on top of it, you're going to do the wrong thing even more efficiently. And that's not something that any of us strive to do, right? So it's about making sure the process and the other pieces of that are in place first, right? The skills, everything else you mentioned. I love that approach, that perspective, because the technology enables those things. It doesn't replace them. It doesn't take over. It doesn't do the work for you. Not yet. We've got our fingers crossed, you know, maybe one day. But for now, it's not doing those things for us. It's helping us to be better at what we should be doing already. Lisa, anything that you want to chime in there potentially?
Yeah, I loved Amber's examples. I really like that what she said earlier too about the fact that the Watson can be used for your career journey as well, being a career coach. There's so many different steps to being HR. It's not just processing those resumes and using AI to figure out what the best candidates are. There was a study from Stanford that was talking about the failure with our pipeline being starting on campus recruiting, where we're sending more men in to talk to the computer science graduates there about their companies and not as many women representing the companies. And then the failure talking about the bro culture, right, and trying to sell people on coming to your company on things that might not necessarily appeal to them. So we could even use AI in that kind of situation where you're figuring out amongst your current employees who's the best to put in front of the individuals, who's your audience, and how do you sell that way.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the other piece you can do is use your data to help you, right? And that's where, you know, we can drive more data-driven outcomes, but we can also use data to make sure that we are teaching our technology the right way. So, you know, I mentioned to you earlier that we use Watson Recruiter for matching. And, you know, given how much we recruit, and we recruit in 170 countries, that data set was very, very important. So we had to look at our, you know, adverse impact analysis of data to make sure, let's start with the data. Is our data clean? That's the first most important aspect. Because if you take your data and then you put AI on top of it, it's the same as you mentioned, Ben, if you have terrible processes and you put technology on it, you're going to have bad technology with process. And if you have bad data and you feed it with AI, AI is going to feed you bad data. So that was so important for us to make sure we analyze our data to say it's clean, that there is no bias there, and we're looking at this inclusively. And, you know, we looked at over 20,000 people we hired, and we looked at all of the data to make sure that it is clean, it is inclusive, there is no bias. And once, you know, we felt comfortable with the data and had experts look at it, validated it, we rolled it out. I mean, this was a two-year study we did and work we did before we rolled it out to all of our recruiters in all of these countries. And now that we see the results, when, you know, Watson gives us an 85% match, you know, we have the confidence that this has been validated and it's based on clean data making these recommendations. So, and that took, you know, making sure that our people, our teams were upskilled. Now, you know, we created these new roles in our organization, such as a talent scientist, which is now you're not just sourcing, you're using and making AI decision support and understanding these new skills to say, if I'm making this recommendation, do I understand the data, the recommendations, the performance skills, and then saying who's going to be a perfect match. So I think all of this holistically plays a very important part in how we make decisions.
Absolutely. Well, that you just said you tried this out for a couple of years, then you put it into practice, and you really validated that it worked, right? So coming back to it, it's not just taking someone's word for it. You've got to try some of these things out. Be a little bit of a scientist. Be a little bit of an experimenter yourself. Be willing to test some things and prove that they work, hopefully, because not everything has that same level of diligence behind it that Watson does. You know, the work the team's done, and Lisa and everyone else at the IBM team, too many to mention, that have had a hand in making sure that the tools are delivering better business outcomes at the end of the day. So if someone's curious about Watson, IBM, Watson Talent, some of the different things we talked about today, I can make sure and get some links into the show notes, but if there's anywhere quickly you wanted to say, anything you want to point to as a resource.
Amber, I can't wait to see what you guys are doing. Is it possible to have a follow-up conversation so you can give me a deep dive?
Yeah, absolutely. We can show you how we look at adverse impact analysis and how we train the data that then we deploy with Watson Recruiter.
Awesome. I can't wait.
Hey, do you want to see Watson in action? Take a look at our careers page and let Watson help you find a job.
Lisa, Amber, this has been such a fun conversation. I love being able to pick the brains of really smart people, and you two did not disappoint. You brought some amazing insights to the table today. I really appreciate your time.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for listening to We're Only Human. Please take a moment to share this episode with another HR leader who might see it as a valuable resource in their daily work. For more information about the podcast and to see all our show archives, please visit upstarthr.com.